So today we're jumping in to start the actual perek, not just the ideas regarding the perek. And I think we're going to at least start by reading through the first couple of sugyas here. And I think as I assured everyone yesterday, the goal is to have people do the reading as much as possible. It's always very helpful. So do we have a volunteer for reading the Mishnah? Okay, go for it. Yeah, translate every so often.
Okay. Shiloh HaKein applies in an Eretz Yisrael and a Chatz La'aretz. B'tnei HaBayis, B'shiloh B'tnei HaBayis. It's when the Bishma Kedesh is around and when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
B'chulin, about Lobin Mekdashin. It applies to Chulin, but not with Mekdashin.
Right, meaning if it's something, the bird belongs to Hekdesh, it wouldn't apply there. We'll get into that at the bottom of this Amud.
Okay, Chomer B'kisir Hadam B'shiloh HaKein. I guess Kisir Hadam is more strict than Shiloh HaKein.
Mm-hmm. In the following ways, right?
Okay, Shekisir Hadam Nohek B'chaya U'v'uf. Because Kisir Hadam applies with Chaya and with Uf.
Right, Chaya is
undomesticated.
Right.
And with, like, birth. B'mezeman U'v'she'en mezuman. With, like, in prepared and if it's not prepared.
Right, and we'll spend some time on this when we get to Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, but right, if it's, like, accessible, if it's on your property, then you wouldn't have Shiloh HaKein, but you do have Kisui Adam in such a case. Okay.
V'Shiloh HaKein Inan Oheg Ela Ba'ov. Shiloh HaKein only applies to, like, birds. V'Inan Oheg Ela B'she'ino Mezuman, and it only applies for something that's not, like, prepared. Ezehu She'ino Mezuman. What's not? What does it mean, like, not being prepared? Examples. Kigon. Avuzin?
Avuzin, yeah.
Avuzin. Ketarnagulim. Type of animal?
Shekinenu v'pardes, right?
Shekinenu v'pardes that nested, made a nest in the orchish?
Right, and yeah, avzin I think is geese. I'm not mistaken, but yeah. So they they make their nest in an orchard. And what's significant about a pardes for these purposes?
Is it public?
Yeah, it's relatively public.
I think you're muted on this. Someone just messaged me.
Can the online people not hear me at all? Okay.
It's muted.
This one is muted.
Oh, the other they're one's both not muted.
On. Okay.
Yep.
There we go.
Okay. Sorry about that, everybody.
All right. We just read the first few lines of the Mishnah, so I think I think everyone who prepared should be able to assume that you prepared correctly and just review that in your head. And so Avzin and Targalon should kinu b'pardes. And what's the significance of having them set up their nest in the pardes? Right, I think you were just saying.
And then it's public.
It's public. And is there a Rashi on this? Yeah, what does Rashi say?
Mardu v'yatsum and habayis. That they rebelled and left their house. They imposed and they're not returning, Levias. The Nasu Midbarios, and they became wild, U Pardes.
U Pardes, Lav Mizuman Hu.
Pardes, Lav Mizuman Hu, and the orchard is not like a prepared place. Sheyacholim Haim Libroach, that they're able to run away. About Im Babayas, Kirinu Pater, but if they made their nest in the house, then it's from the
mitzvah. Right, so the basic distinction is, right, is it mizuman or not? Is it accessible? Are the animals trapped, basically? Right, so in an orchard, the bird can fly around wherever it wants, whereas in the house, the animal is more or less trapped. There's an interesting point in Rashi here. He assumes it's a case of Mardu, where originally this bird was domesticated, then it ran away, flew away, it rebelled. So some of the Mepharshim ask why Rashi needs to say that. We're not going to get into that now, but the main point for our purposes is Pardes is, it's relatively public. It's not on your property where you have control of it. It's, you know, it's sort of outside. It can move around. It's not readily accessible. The basic logic here for this difference between Mizuman and not is it's Ki Kare Kan Sipor, Prat L'Mizuman, right? You have to, like, come across it. You're like, oh, it's a bird, right? Rather than, yeah, that's the bird that lives in my house, right? Or that's on my property. That's part of the... That's the way the drasha. That's where the drasha comes from. We'll see that a bit later. Okay, keep going.
The thing Yoni had Darcia. Is that another type of bird?
Yeah, and the Gemara later on is going to say is the resh before the dal, is the dal before the resh. Doesn't really know exactly what the word is, but whatever it is, it's a similarly wild bird.
Okay, Pater Mishiluach. is pet their property.
Oh, sorry. It's domesticated in that case. Right, domesticated, and that's why you're exempt, right?
Okay. Oaf tame pater milish loach. Non-kosher bird is also pater for the mitzvah. Oaf tame rovet al beitze oaf tahar. V'tahar rovet al beitze oaf tame pater milish loach. So a non-kosher bird that is sitting on kosher eggs, like the eggs from a kosher bird, and the opposite, a kosher bird on top of non-kosher eggs, is pater from the mitzvah.
Mm-hmm. And now what's implicitly a very interesting case where you would be chayav according to this line? Right, this case says if either the mother or the eggs are not kosher, then you're pater. What's
none of them are kosher?
Well, if none of them are kosher, you're also pater. But what if, right? What if they're both kosher, but what?
It's not its own eggs.
It's not its own eggs, right? Let's say you have one species or one species of kosher bird and a different species of kosher egg, and for whatever reason, adopted the eggs or something. So it sounds like, and this is how we paskin, that in that case you would be chayav, right? So just thinking about, I think the Rambam said yesterday, tamei mitzvos don't always work out perfectly. There's not always a perfect correlation between the reason and the application. So this would be a case where it's not actually the mother bird, right? It's some other bird that happens to be watching, but the mitzvah would still apply as long as they're both kosher.
Okay. Kori dachar. Rabbi Eliezer, mechayev v'chachamim kudrin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is it like if you come across a male bird?
Yeah, and in particular, a kore is apparently is a bird that likes like sitting on eggs, even if it's not its own, it's not their its own eggs, and including the males. So that's why this example is given. But yeah, it's just an example of a bird. It actually comes up in there's a pasuk in Haftorah actually with a kore. If anyone remembers, I don't know if anyone knows offhand. No. I don't remember which Haftorah, but the pasuk says that. That a bird, a kore, this kore bird that sits on eggs that didn't hatch, that's what it's like if a person makes money illicitly. And right halfway through your life, the kids will realize that you like kidnap them as eggs, and they'll rebel, or your wealth will leave you because it's not naturally yours. Anyway, that's I think why we're talking about kore, because it's the sort of animal, the sort of bird that jumps to other nests. So yeah, what if it's male? So we have a machlokes here, right? And why would you think that a zachar would be excluded?
That's
aim. Yeah, right. That seems pretty straightforward. And yet, Rav Lezer still is mechayi. Maybe he would say aim is the standard case, but not the only case. Okay, so that's why don't we just take a look at just the last couple of Rashi's, if you're up for that. Starting from Pater, I guess.
From Pater. Dekan Tzipor Ba'inan Shetehe Ha'inan Mekananes Tzipor Tehura. So,
and this is going back on the case of where either the mother or the chick or egg is not a kosher animal.
Okay, because the nest has to be one that the mother made.
Or the Eim HaMekananes, what would you say? The nesting bird, the mother bird, mm-hmm. Yeah, is a tzipor tahora.
Ve'ov tahar harovet al beitze ov tamei. Nami,
right, also.
So also a tahar bird that's sitting on tamei eggs. Afagav dekan tzipor hu, even though...
Right, it's a nest. It's a nest of a kosher bird, right? Tzipor implies kosher here. Okay. So kan tzipor, the nest is all good and the mother is all good, and but pater. Still pater. Why?
To the mefarish the Gemara, v'as habanim tikach lecha v'lo lechlavecha, because it says in the Gemara that the kids you should take for you and not for your dogs. Gemara.
And what does it mean? What does it mean for dogs? Right, so the idea is, if it's not kosher, you're not going to eat the eggs, but you might give eggs to your dog, right? But the point is, it's not edible for you. The point of the pasuk is, v'es habanim tikach lach. It should be a case where you send away the mother bird, and you can actually eat the eggs. If the eggs aren't kosher, this whole parsha doesn't apply. We'll get into that more in a couple of days, you know, with the question of maybe the only reason you're doing this is because you actually want the eggs, right? That may be implicit in that drasha, not necessarily, but that's the point here. If the eggs are not kosher, the whole rule doesn't apply because it's not ve'esabanin tikach lach. Yeah.
Okay, the Gemara parach miklal the oaf tahar harovitz al beti min acher kemoso tahar b'chayev. I guess that's what you said before, that if it's a kosher bird on top of other kosher eggs, then it's chayev.
Right, and the Gemara will make that diuk, will make that implication later. You know, it's worth mentioning now. Okay, good. And just the last two short ones.
Oaf tamehu v'darko lervot al beti acherim, the tame bird that has the way of sitting on other bird's eggs.
Right, and actually some of, I think at least in my Masorah Sashas, you may have it too, you see a little letter there. They correct Tame to Tahor. Why do they do that? Tame would be Pater. How does that make any, right? We're talking about this case if it's male, but it, you know, if it's not kosher, there's no question in the first place. So that presumably is just some, you know, copyist error or technical error. So they corrected the Gersa from Tame to Tahor. Okay, and then, right, Zachar Pater Mishleach, Kiyolaf Tame Gemara. Okay, great. So we read the Mishnah, and you know, we're gonna, as usually, we're gonna end up focusing at the beginning on the beginning parts of the Mishnah. It'll take us a couple days to get to the later parts, but that's our Mishnah, which gives us a wasn't intending to be a pun, but a bird's eye view of some of the issues we're gonna be looking at the next couple of dapim. Okay, now do we have another volunteer for the Gemara? Everyone's okay, Tamar.
I can do a shot. So Rabbi Avin Rabbi Masya, Chad Amar Kol Yichad Itznan Ba'aris VeBichutz La'aris Shelo Litzora Levan Yerishas Agaz. So Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Masya, I guess, are saying something, mm-hmm. And one of them says that anywhere, like all the places where it's taught, like whether it's in Ba'aris or Bechutz La'aris, it's not needed, meaning the Mishnah didn't need to mention it, except for in the case of Rishit Hagaz.
Right, okay, and what do we mean all the places?
All the different Mishnayos that apparently exist, which I haven't looked at yet.
Right, but Rashi gets that for us. Can you take a look at the first Rashi on the Gemara?
Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Masya, Befarish Hach Matnitin, the Kisur Adam, the Otoge Beno, the Gira Nashe, the Hazra, the Ha Lachaim.
Right, and so each of these cases, and each of these is really a parak in Chulin or a half parak in Chulin. It starts off. You give this is like your blanket statement at the beginning. If it's true that it applies both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, both bifnei bayis and lo bifnei bayis, both by Chulin and Muktashim, and we just use that same formulation each time. Okay, so they spoke about this formulation. Mar Parish.
So, Mar Parish, sorry, I lost this. Oh yeah, here we go. Mar Parish Hada, the Mar Parish Hada, one of them explains one, and the other one explains one. The low plegi, and they don't argue, the Trevayu Kham Mepharshi Le'ida, and they each come to explain a different one. V'tzrichin Anu Bomar Devar B'Shem Omro. And we need them to say each one in the name of who it was said.
Right, and we go out of our way to say, well, they each said it. We don't remember who said what. They don't. So Rashi thinks, as long as they argue, we just want to, you know, we want to get the quote right. We don't want it to be wrong.
Yeah.
So we sort of leave it open. One of them said this. One of them said the other thing. Okay. But either way, they're trying to sort out why we have this formulation in our Mishnah and in all these other Mishnayos. Aretz v'chutz la'aretz, b'ithnei abayis, lo b'ithnei abayis, chulin muktashim. Why do we keep saying this? Is it actually necessary? Do we actually have a havamina that would be otherwise? Right. And so here's what they're going to say.
So back to the Gemara, I guess. Lafukim midrav Eli, except for Rav, to exclude Rav Eli. De Amar, that he says, Rishit Hagaz eno nohig ela ba'aretz. Rishit Hagaz is only practiced in the land.
Okay, so therefore, why? So only in the case of Rishit Hagaz do we need to say it's nohig ba'aretz and b'chutz la'aretz? Why?
Because we want to show that we don't paskin by Rabbi Eli.
Right, exactly. Rabbi Eli says otherwise. We paskin against him. Okay, so that's why in each of these cases we say aretz and chutz la'aretz. Okay.
V'chad amar kol heichad etznan b'tnei bayis v'shelo b'tnei bayis. Shalom Litzorech, Libad Me'oto Viet Beno. So also, in all the Mishnahs, it teaches Bifnei Abayis and Lo Bifnei Abayis.
Right, whether the Beis HaMikdash is standing or not.
Right. Because of the, like, it's not needed except for the case of Oto Viet Beno. So why is it not needed? Soka de Atcha Amina, Ho'il V'inyana de Kachim K'tiv. So I would have thought this in the case of Oto Viet Beno, because it's discussed in the matter of or I guess it's written in the Torah in the matter of Kachim.
How so?
It's like, I guess the psukim are next to each other.
Yeah, right. The next pasuk is about how to bring a shlamin, right? So it's right in the context there of Kachim. So what might you have thought?
That's limited to Kachim.
You're limited to Kachim. So therefore, right, so oh, you would have thought, yeah, keep going.
Bizman de'ika Kachim no ninhog. No, sorry, my letters are...
Yeah, ninhog, yeah.
In a time that there is Kachim, it's practice. Bizman de'ika Kachim lo ninhog. In a time that there's no Kachim, it's not practice. So that would be, you know, corresponding to whether or not the Beis HaMikdash is around. And then it says kamash malan, meaning kamash malan that it's during both.
Right, kamash malan both. So you might have thought based on its placement in the Torah, it only applies when there's a Beis HaMikdash. That's not true. So that's why we need to spell it out in that one case of Oso Ves Beno. And once we say it there, we throw it into all the other cases. Right, it becomes like a boilerplate formulation, even though it's only a chiddush in one of the cases. Okay, so that's so statement number two is down. Right, we've clarified why we need to mention Bifnei Abayis or Shlo Bifnei Abayis. And now the third one.
So good to ask them. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. I just read it.
Vitarvayhu.
Vitarvayhu. Amri kol yichad ditznan v'chulin v'mikdashin v'tzorech levad migiran nashe. So we actually started doing the Tosfot on this, but I didn't understand why it said v'tzorech and not shalom v'tzorech in this case. But it said in any place that teaches v'chulin and v'mikdashin, I guess it's needed except for the case in Gidhanasha. Shita Mishan de Akish Pakale Isser. So I guess it's quoting the Gidhanasha case now. And it says, it's obvious that when you make it like Kodesh, the Isser like comes out from Gidhanasha Mine, the Isser comes out from the Gidhanasha.
Are we saying that or are we asking that?
I guess it's a question.
Right. Pshita, mishum the ikdish pakale isr gid anasha mine.
Would we actually say that the gid anasha, like that the isr comes out from it? Vilavukina volados, and we wouldn't establish it for the children.
So here we're sort of pushing back, right? We say vilavukimna vilados kachim. Didn't we earlier, you know, earlier in our mesechta? Yeah, we're asking, actually, maybe we were worried about something there, because we went out of our way to come up with a case of Vlados Kachim, which I think Rashi helps explain this here. Do you want to take a look at Rashi?
Sure.
So Vlavmiu Kimnale, Beperek Gid Anasha, right back on Daf Pei Tes, in the Perek that talks about Gid Anasha, right? We set it up in a case of Bevlados Kachim. So what is that?
So we come to teach that it's chayiv because of the gid. The mikdushim,
Mukdashim, right?
Sorry, I'm getting a call. I don't know what. This is from one of the students on the screen. So, okay, someone. Should someone take over while I get this?
No, keep reading.
Okay. But I'm getting a call from my phone.
Okay.
Oh, here. Maybe someone should take over. I don't want to. She's a pressing.
Okay, do we have a Rashi volunteer? Okay, I'll take it, I guess. So Bavados Kachim, the Asa Lashmuinan, the Chayav Mishum Gid, right? That we learn out by Vlados Kachim that you have your Chayav in terms of Gid, meaning the Gid Anasha is not kosher, even though it's Kachim. Umukdashim, right, even in that case, the Kavan the Isr Mukdashim, Kadim, since the prohibition of Kachim, right? It's prohibited to use Kachim for your own purposes. That comes first. Kinefarish Hasam. So we have a little Talmudic biology here, right? That the creation of the vlad, the baby sort of being formed inside the mother, comes before the gidin, the sinews. So basically, animalhood comes before the status of the sinews comes about. So, and usually we have an idea of anus or chal isser, right? So the first isser that starts is the one that's there, and it's hard to get in a second isser for things to become double yasser. Usually it's tricky to get in there. So since the first the animal is becomes an animal, becomes a vlad, right? And vlados kachim is nisar hana, you can't benefit from it. Only later does the gid come about. So you might have thought that it has an isser hektish, but there's no isser gid anasha because that isser never can take effect because it's sort of blocked by the pre-existing isser of the isser kachim. So that's what you would have thought. Therefore, isrich lashma inan da'asi isser gid v'chayel alayhu kamash malan, right? We don't go through the details of how this works, but for whatever reason, we don't accept that logic. And even though vlados kachim, you would have a good reason to think that it would be permitted, the conclusion is that it's still prohibited by kachim. So that's our resolution earlier, back on Daf Pei Tes, as to why it actually is necessary to say that Gid Anasha applies both by chulin and by kachim. Right? You might have thought it only applies by chulin. By kachim, the is, or at least in a case of vlad kachim, right, by a baby karban, you might think that the prohibition of being kachim takes effect first, blocks the Gid Anasha from becoming usser. That's not true. That's why we need to spell that out in the Mishnah. Okay. So that's our Gemara's question, right? We said just now that it's obvious, right? You don't need to mention the prohibition of Gid Anasha, that it applies both by Kachim and by Chulin, because Pshita Mishum the Ikdish Pelkale Isser Gid Anasha Amine. Why would Hektish change the prohibition? And the answer is, the response to that is Vilavu Kimna Bivlados Kachim. Didn't we say that in a case of Vlad Kachim, actually it's not obvious and you do need it? Right? So we're challenging this idea that it's not necessary in that case. We're challenging the statement of Rav Avin and Rav Mesha. And our response is, right, umay tama ukimna. Well, why did we set that up? Why did we go out of our way to come up with that explanation? Lav mishum tikashilan lo lisni. Isn't it because we were wondering, well, you could have just not said it, right? Lo lisni, you wouldn't have to say it and it would be fine. We were trying to explain why there's this apparently unnecessary appearance of bichulan uve muktashim in the context of Gid Anasha, but may karanami lo tikshi lach. Right, you don't need to ask that question. As we're saying now, this whole point of this teaching of Rabbi Avin or Rabbi Meisha is that it's not always necessary in every case. In some cases, we just, you know, it became the boilerplate formulation. We just repeat it. So, may karanami lo tikshi lach. Don't ask that question in the first place. I did the tana letzorech, tana nami shelo letzorech. Since in some cases, it's necessary to specify bechulin uve muktashim, or bifnei abayis v'shelo bifnei abayis, or be'aretz uve chutzlaretz. Since in some cases it's necessary, we just adopt that as the general formulation, and you don't need to find some unusual case of Gid Anasha that you might have thought wouldn't apply to kachim. No, it obviously applies to kachim and to chulin. Don't need to overthink it. So that's the conclusion here, and this whole mini sugya is just asking the question of why do we need to say what we say in the Mishnah. We're not arguing about facts, really. I'm not arguing about dinim. The question is, why does the Mishnah say what it does? Which the Gemara sometimes talks about. Sometimes we get out of it interesting nafkaminas. This is a case where I think there's not too much of halachic consequence or a lumdish consequence that comes out of our Gemara. So I think, unless there are questions on it, and the Tosfos deal with, again, with ancillary issues, how to read this, I'd prefer all things equal to move forward in the Gemara. But happy to take questions or thoughts on this before we do that. Okay, so this next little sugya that we're going to jump into, b'chulin avalob muktashim, the actual din, which, as we just said, is necessary. You do need to spell it out here in Shiloh HaKein, because it's not obvious at all, that Shiloh HaKein applies to chulin, but not to muktashim, not to kachim, right? That if the bird, or the eggs, or both, we'll get into that a little bit, is kachim, is set aside for a karban, in that case, you actually don't have a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein, right? So what's the story there? So the Gemara here is going to explicate that and throw in a couple of other dinim for good measure. So do we have a volunteer for reading this part of the Gemara? Okay, yeah, Nettie.
Okay, so the Mishnah says, right, so am I low? Like, why doesn't it apply to mukdashim? The Amar Kra Shalom Tishal Hasain, B'misha Tamitzuba L'Shalchal. Yatzazesh Iyat Tamitzuba L'Shalchal, El Allah B'yoli De Gizbar. So we say, like, the Pasuk says you should send away the mother bird. So that implies that it's someone that you're supposed to send, a bird that you're supposed to send away, which comes to exclude a bird that's Hekdesh, where you're not supposed to send it away. Rather, you're supposed to bring it to, like, the temple treasure.
Right, meaning a bird without a previous engagement, so to speak, right? Something you're supposed to do with it otherwise. Okay, so that drasha, we exclude hekdesh, and it's a bit more complicated than that. We'll get to that, but for reading, this is great. Yeah.
Amar Ravina, Hilkaf Uf Tavor Shahar Hasanefesh Pater Mishiluach. So Ravina says, therefore, we can also extrapolate that a kosher bird that kills a person would also be pater from sending away. My time, the Amar Kra Shalom Tishlach Hasayim Vemitza Shata Mitzuba L'Shalcho Yatzazesh Iyata Mitzuba L'Shalcho Ela L'Havio Mavizeh. So, right, because the pasuk says to send away the mother, and again, it's a bird that doesn't have a previous engagement of somewhere it needs to be, but this bird, you have a mitzvah to bring it to Basin.
And why? What do you need to bring it to Basin for?
Yes.
Right, to get the death penalty, right? The Judaism has an unusual case of the death penalty for animals who have killed. And let's just finish up a few more lines here, right? This is an important, a big point, right? Extrapolating, Ravina is extrapolating to a whole new din that we didn't have in the Mishnah. And now we're going to try to sort out a couple details.
So, hechidami, what are the circumstances of this case? He's a gamar dinai, barkatelahim. So if it's a bird that already got its gamar din, then it's supposed to be murdered. What's it doing, wandering around that you just find it in the field? Ella de lo gamar dinai, ubay la suya le be dina. Bekuma bayu biar tahara amikir becha. So rather, it's a bird that hasn't yet gone to trial and gotten its death sentence. So you do have to go bring it to the Beis Din in order to fulfill the obligation of removing evil from your midst.
Okay, great. Right, so that's why this bird is around. It somehow hasn't had its day in court yet, but it needs it. And for that reason, we don't do Shiloh HaKein because it's already set to be somewhere else, just like Kadshim is set to be brought to the Mikdash. And that's why the Din doesn't apply. That's Ravina's extrapolation. Okay, and we have, I think, a couple of Rashis that don't exist that we'll see when we see Tosfos. But maybe it's worth looking at these last couple of Rashis on the bottom of Kuf Lamed Ches. Shaharagas HaNefesh. Nettie, do you want to pick that up?
Sure. So Shaharagas HaNefesh, Vaharkaf Mara, the Nims of the Cain. And then afterwards it rebelled, it ran away basically, and now it's found in this nest.
Mm-hmm.
Hatar Vila Shalayah, Hoyo Vibar Kitalahu, Vahafi Bar Shalay, the Kabayi Lashalayah from Bakum Hatsala, the Hekir, Bahaila Bar Hakir. So because the bird is chayav to be killed, and this is sort of how you darshan the pasuk, that it's talking about a bird that can be sent to a place where it can be safe and it's a hefkir place, and this bird that just killed someone is not that's not applicable to it.
Right, and Rashi here is trying to sort of get in both dinim together. Makom Hatzala v'Hefker, right? Hatzala, as opposed to getting the death penalty, and Hefker, as opposed to Hekdesh.
Oh.
Right? So I think that's also helps explain Ravina's connection between the two dinim, right? Shaleach tishalach means you send the bird wherever it wants to go, right? Not you send it, not that you have a chiyuv, a pre-existing chiyuv, to send it to get chiyuv misa or to Hekdesh, right? It should be able to go wherever it wants. And since that doesn't apply, we have this drasha. Keep going.
So v'hafi darish kra shalom tishlach asa ro'ay l'shalcho v'she'in ro'ay l'shalcho al tishalchenu. So the pasuk says you should send it, so that implies you should send something that's appropriate to be sent. But something that's not appropriate to be sent because it has another place to be, you should not send.
Mm-hmm. And you basically said, Barakatalhu, you said the Rashi outside. But Rashi is Barakatalhu meheicha nimlat, right? How would the animal have gotten there? If it was going through the process, Bezdin would have held on to it, which is, a bit unusual because it's, okay, maybe it did run away. Is that impossible? But maybe it's less likely. Some I think Rishonim even question this and have an interesting take on it. Maybe we'll hold off on that for now. And what about this last Rashi? Uvi Arta Hara?
So it's a mitzvah on anyone that encounters someone who's chayav misa to bring them to Bezin in order to remove evil, Rishayim from the Israel.
Right, and so when he's talking about Rishayim Yisrael, I think the original, the most basic din here of Uvirata Rami Kirbecha is talking about people. Right? Mm-hmm. It comes with a few different psukim who people get the death penalty, and right, Uvirata Rami Kirbecha in Pshat means you have thereby gotten rid of the problem, but Chazal darshan it in a broader sense. You should always try to be mivar the ra. The question of whether this applies to animals or not is an interesting one. I don't know if we're going to get to it inside, but different mefarshim get into this on the Rambam. I think it's Nizkei Mamon Yud Zayin. So there's an interesting machlokas as whether this is true or not. Rashi here definitely seems to think that the mitzvah of Uviyar Torah Mikibrecha applies to giving animals the death penalty as well. Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, is sort of like, let's say, having like a dangerous dog or something as your pet, like, does the Gemara also say that's from Uviyar Torah Mikibrecha?
So no, the Isser of being Megadel Kelev Rab Isoch Beso, that's learned out, oddly enough, from Ve'asisa Ma'akele Gagecha Ve'losasim Damim Be'Vesecha, right? You have to make a parapet, which I guess is a nice bridge between what it actually means, which is like a little fence, and a wild dog, which is a parapet. It means that you have to make a fence, right? You have to make a fence on your roof, and Ve'losasim Damim Be'Vesecha, not have leave blood in your house, not have dangerous things in your house. So that's the Gemara's source for being Megadol Kelev Ra. Which is, yeah, so it's interesting that, you know, maybe there'd be another, right, there'd be another prohibition, but I think until the animal's actually done something, you can't really say it's Uviyar Torah, right? You want to have proof before you start giving the death penalty to even to animals. You want to have some evidence that they're actually, so that they're actually dangerous in this way. Okay, so that's the Gemara here, and the Rashi's. Any questions or thoughts on that? So we'll turn now to Tosfos. Tosfos is the Ramaskil Yatza, which is, yeah, I think by far the most, sort of like the most crucial source. A lot of different things come out of this Tosfos, and we'll see how far we get today, but certainly, you know, most of the handout are things that in one way or other touch on this Tosfos. So do we have a volunteer for who wants to read the Tosfos? Yeah.
So if you're so contrast, Rashi explains, the time of Mishum Zolo Amra Torah Shaleach Lutakala. So the reason is because the Torah didn't say you should send it off for, I'll get into some issues somewhere.
Well, what exactly is the Takala? What is the issue that we're implying here?
Yes, if someone comes across the Hakdish for later on, like uses it, that would be
Right, exactly. Throwing, like sending animals that are hektish out into the wild is a terrible idea, right? Because you're going to cause major problems for someone. It's asur midaraisa to get on nut, to benefit, to use something that's hektish. So that's the problem, says this Rashi. Where's the Rashi, by the way, who says this? Yeah, it's a phantom Rashi. I mean, it could very well be. It was out there. It's not in our published Gemaras. This phantom Rashi. Right, or even the Mesoras Hashas says, right, at least mine, I don't know, there are different editions, but Perish HaKuntra Shilafanenu, Eno. And the Achronu try to figure it out. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. The truth is, someone else says what Rashi supposedly says. Did anyone see? It's on the handout. Not in so many words. Someone, like, there's, like, may have said the very words that Rashi said, or something very close to it. Nechsam Sofer maybe had a more developed version. So source number two on the sheet, the Tosfos Rush. So the Tosfos Rush says, and we'll get back to Tosfos, don't worry, you're not off the hook. Right, it says, Yatzazeh she'enata mitzuveh alav l'shalcho alavi olidei gizbar, that's the Gemara. And the Tosfos Rush says, hava matzi l'meimar, you could have said this answer also, mishum delo amra Torah, shaleach l'takala. Because the Pasuk wouldn't have said, shaleach t'shalach, send away the bird, and it'll cause problems. Right, and then whatever, the Gemara felt like not saying that, but it could very well have said that. That's totally true. So presumably that's the same Shita as this Rashi. Of course, Tosfos Rush from the Tosfos school, students of Rashi, right? It's all the same school, ultimately. So the Tosfos Rush preserves this Shita of Rashi that our Tosfos wants to reject. Fine, but this is the way, at least the way Tosfos presents it here, is this is how Rashi or the Kuntras is explaining our Gemara. Right, which is a little surprising, as Tosfos is going to say, but it sounds like our Gemara is saying Yatza zeh she'ena tametzuvah l'shalcho elo havio li de gizbar. Right, you shouldn't be sending this away; you should be giving it to the gizbar. And Rashi or the Kuntra says that means that you would never want to do shalach l'takal. You wouldn't want to send it away because that would cause problems. Somehow, Rashi is saying it's the same thing. So you keep going. Tosfos is going to have a little trouble with that, right?
And furthermore, so then at the end we end up saying that the bird who killed someone, his martin wasn't finished yet. Then came in with a color. So then there's no issue if like it goes off into the wild and someone uses it. It's like it's fine.
Why is it fine?
know, is there an assertive to use a verb that killed someone if it's...
So, right, so, and he's, first of all, he's crossing over into the second case, right? He started by talking about hekdesh, so clearly something that's hekdesh is asur ba'ana, right? But then he shifts over to the case of the animal, that the bird that kills, right? And so at what point is an animal that kills asur ba'ana?
Once
it's been paskin and bezdin that it's a murderer, right? Then you have to kill it, and it's like shor niskal, it's asur ba'ana. What possible response is there to this Tosfos' question?
They don't want the animal running around. It's a murder.
There's more than one type of takala, right? There's a takala of isra hana, like that's bad. It's also bad to have murderous animals running around, right? That's also a takala. But I guess Tosfos here is assuming the takala we're talking about is only isra hana. So how could it be an isra hana if the animal didn't have the gemar din yet? But you can see where the debate is. Yeah. Yes, but it might be the only example according to how Tosfos is taking it, okay. Right? So that's the question, yeah.
But would that apply to the eggs, like in the case of if the isra hana just because it's like a oof and miskal?
What's the case that you're envisioning? The mother...
No, just because like how are you getting hana from the mother by sending it?
You won't necessarily get hana from the mother, but you'll send it out and then someone will, I don't know, eat it.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, that's the takalas for everyone, right? Takala is like a stumbling block or a problem. So there's different types of problems, but Tosfos seems to have a pretty narrow view. He only seems to be concerned with the Isra Hana, whereas presumably this other sheet, Tosfos Rush, maybe Rashi, could say that the Takala is other things. So I'm sure we'll spell that out. Yeah, sorry.
So how would you explain exactly the beginning of the Tosfos where it says, the time of Mishum, the Lo Amar Torah? Like, what does it mean by, because it didn't say?
Lo Amar Torah, Shaleach Litakala. The Torah would never tell you to send away a bird if it would cause problems. And sending away a bird that belongs to Hekdesh will cause problems because people will benefit from it, eat it, whatever, and that's Uzzer, because it's Hekdesh.
So why does the Tosfos disagree with that?
Tosfos disagrees with that for two reasons. First of all, that's not what the Gemara sounds like it's saying, right? The Lishna lo mashmach. The Gemara sounds like it's saying you're supposed to be sending it to Hekdesh, not to nowhere. The Gemara doesn't sound like it's saying it's about a takala. That's problem number one. Problem number two is if you look at the second case, and he's assuming the two cases have basically the same reason, which is not obvious, but assuming we cross over from the Hekdesh case to the Horeg case, in that case, it's before Gemar Din. So what's the Takala? There's no Isser Hana. Now, what we said is you could respond to that by saying that there's a different sort of Takala. It's not a Takala of Isser Hana, it's a Takala of sending out a murderous bird. Sounds like a really bad idea. It's dangerous for people. But Tosfos really thinks we're focusing on a halachic takala, right? A prohibition of the Isra Hana here. Okay, so Tosfos rejected this approach of Perish HaKuntris. We're going to revive it later, so keep it in your heads. But Tosfos rejected it for now. And now Tosfos is going to give the alternate way of reading, maybe the more straightforward way of reading our Gemara. Yeah?
So he says, like, the simple understanding of the pasuk is that you're supposed to send away a bird that's evil to be sent away. It's supposed to this bird, which is hekdesh, and therefore it's supposed to be somewhere else, like brought to the basement.
Right, and it's a mitzvah to do with something else, right? It's almost like you have the prior mitzvah takes precedence. The mitzvah of sending it to the gizbar, to the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash takes precedence, and therefore you shouldn't send it away. And that's the straightforward reading of our Gemara, right? So let's just keep track for those at home. I guess we have people at home, right? So so number one, right, shot in the Gemara, straightforward reason, is you have this conflicting obligation, right? You really should be giving it to the Gizbar. You shouldn't be sending it away. The whole pasuk doesn't apply. And the other approach that Rashi supposedly said is that we're worried about the takala, about it causing problems if you send an animal that's an Isra Hana into the wild, right? Those are the two reasons we have so far. And now we're going to get a third explanation, also by way of rejection, and also from a phantom Rashi. Okay, keep reading.
So Rashi explains that we can't learn this drasha out from the part of the pasuk that says tikaflof, you should take the eggs for you, because we have the eggs of like doves that you're not high in the duah for them. Even though you're not allowed to get hana from them. And So therefore, like, even if you take a look, that'll be fine.
Well, okay. So yes, let's flesh this out a bit. And yeah, so first of all, what did we darshan previously from Tikkach Lach? Rashi mentioned this.
The kosher, not kosher.
Kosher, not kosher, right? Tikkach Lach v'lo. You should take it for yourself to be able to eat it and not for your dogs. I mean, if it's not kosher, the eggs are not kosher, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. The whole thing doesn't apply. So maybe Tosfos, or I guess the Kuntres is suggesting and then rejecting, you might say Tikkach Lach, but only if it's kosher, and also Tikkach Lach, but only if you can eat it. Can you eat hekdesh before you give it? No. So that would exclude it too. So why don't we learn it out from there? Right? So Tosfos, or the Kuntris, Tosfos is quoting, says, no, lo matzidah, so you can't learn it out from there. And why not? So spell this out more with the Beitzei Torim, right?
We can't learn out this
exclusion of Shiloh HaKein from hekdesh, okay. Right? Which we learned out from a different pasuk, or the beginning of our pasuk, right? Shaleach tishalach. Send away the mother, as opposed to if the mother should be going somewhere else. We don't learn it out from the end of the pasuk. Besabanim tikach lach. Take the eggs, or take the babies, the chicks. Why don't we learn it out from there? And so the answer is, yeah. So Beitzei Torim.
So there are eggs that, like, you can't get enough from, but it's not necessary to eat
them. Meaning, right, even if they're hektish, right, you set aside a tor, a turtle dove, or whatever exactly a tor is, and you set it aside for hektish, for a karban, and then it lays eggs. So, yeah, so Beitzei Torim, presumably because it's not like an inherent part of the animal, it's sort of a part of it, it's not exactly, you know, it's not exactly the animal, so it takes this middle status. Lo nen and velo mo'alin, which usually we assume means derabanan, right? So it's aser midirabanan to benefit from them, because midirabanan belongs to hektish, but if you actually eat them or you take them, you only violate a derabanan, not a deraisa. You're not violating the full prohibition of mi'ila. Okay, so therefore what? So the eggs are only aser midirabanan, therefore what? Midaraisa, right? On a biblical level, on a daraisa level, the drasha of v'asabanim tikach lach wouldn't apply, right? V'asabanim tikach lach, you can take the eggs or the chicks, or in this case, the eggs of the tor, midaraisa. The only prohibition is taking it midarabanan. So that's why you can't use this alternate drasha of v'asabanim tikach lach, but not if the eggs belong to hektesh. You can't make that drasha because that only is true midarabanan. Midaraisa, you could take the eggs for yourself. Okay. Right. Yeah, okay, keep going.
So even though for a kache, so like a certain kind of package where I guess like just the for kache vada kabai, so that you would be mauling with, therefore you're not be allowed to take them for yourself, even if you do a raisa. We say, no, I'm just talking about the other kind of hakdish, which is kachin zveyach, so that you wouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah, right. He's trying to avoid a problem, right? You might undermine this whole point by saying, okay, that whole rule that these turtle dove eggs are only midrabanan hektesh, but midaraisa they're not. That's only true for kachay mizbeach, not for kachay berakabais. What are kachay mizbeach and kachay berakabais? Probably some of you are wondering. So kachay mizbeach are karbanos that are sort of set aside, animals that are set aside to be a karban, right? Like you say this bird or this sheep should be a karban, that animal is kedushas mizbeach, and you actually have to bring it as a karban. You can't trade it in or anything. It's really on track to be a karban. There's also kedushas berakabais, which is, you can say, like, I don't know, this book belongs to Hekdesh. And what are you going to do with that? You're not going to bring it as a karban. You're not going to use it to build the Beis HaMikdash. So those are basically the only physical things you use, right? So you trade it in for money, right? You do a pidyon, you trade it in. So those are the two different types of Hekdesh. Now, the reason why Beitzei Torin, the reason why dove eggs, those are not really fit for a karban, and they're not really part of the mother, so they're only midrabanan hektesh. That's true for kachim izbeach, but kachim ben kabayis, they're fully useful in selling them on the, not black market, right? Turtle dove eggs, you sell them, the money goes to hektesh, and you're all set, right? So those are fully kadosh. That's a din d'oraisa. So maybe, in a case of Beitzei Torin, We should be thinking about a case of Beitzei Torim that's Kedushas Berakabayis, Tosfos is suggesting, right? In which case, the Isser is Deoraisa, and then the Drasha would work, right? V'asabanim Tikach Lach, as opposed to where you can't benefit from the eggs. This is a case where you can't benefit from the eggs, even midoraisa, because it's, even if it's beis etorim, it's bene kabais, it's klushas bene kabais. These are monetarily part of hekdesh. So his response to that is no, because we'll see the Gemara on Kuf Lamed Tes. We're going to see just about everyone holds that we're talking it, or everyone holds that we may be talking about a case of kedushas mizbeach, of an animal set aside as a karban, not just that its value is set aside, and therefore you still have the exclusion. You have the problem that Beit Zeitorin would only be asur midrabanan, the drasha wouldn't work, and he's solved that problem for now. Okay, keep going. It's got a little complex there, right? Well, it'll get simpler once we're at a Tosfos. Yeah. Right. And so right, he's just noting there's a debate later of whether it's kachim mizbeach, kachim kabayis, but everyone agrees it could be kachim mizbeach. The only question is whether it can also be kachim kabayis. But the conclusion is, right, that tikach lach doesn't work. Okay.
So if we're saying that it's not referring to kachim kabayis, then it doesn't, the language of to bring it to the hands of the gizra, like the treasure house cloth there, I guess, doesn't really work so well,
because
that's not what you do with
kachim
mizbeach, I guess.
Right, what do you do with kachim mizbeach?
It's karban.
You bring it as a karban. Kachim mizbeach, right, if you say that this computer, I shouldn't actually say that, you say that, you know, an item, it's not mine, so I probably could get away with it, but, and also I'm also not serious, but you say this item belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, that's kedushas damim, that's kedushas ben kabayis, in other words, and that you're going to trade in, you're going to give to the gizbar, right, and trade it in. But if it's, but our Gemara seems to be, right, the line in our Gemara is, Shalef to Shalach, and not if you're going to give it to the Gizbar. You're giving it to the Gizbar, why are you doing that? Presumably because it's only Kadosh monetarily, it's not Kedushas Mizbeach. So that's a bit of a problem in, right, Tosfos undermines a little bit its own rejection of this suggestion in by Rashi. So for our purposes, again, we're not going to get into all these nitty-gritty details going forward. Good to know that they're there in Tosfos. But the main purpose for us, we're going to be thinking about more as we continue this sugya, is there are three different possible reasons why a tzipor of hekdesh does not have the din of shiluach hakein. Right, three possible reasons. One is the one the Gemara tells us. Well, let's have you all answer the question. Right, what are the three reasons? Possible reasons. First, what's the one the Gemara says explicitly? Yeah.
You're not supposed to send it away. You're supposed to bring it to the Beis
HaMikdash. Right. Don't send it away. Bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. It has another has a prior engagement. That's answer number one. What's another answer? Right. These two other answers are both in Tosfos, even though he rejects them. Yeah.
The takala problem.
Right. The takala problem that someone might use it. It's asur b'anan. Someone might use it. So why would you ever send it away? You're just causing problems. And what's the third possible answer? This drasha that may or may not work. Yeah.
That since it's like something that you can't eat yourself, then maybe you wouldn't have a chiddush.
Right, it's the babies, the eggs or the chicks belong to Hekdesh, and you can't benefit from them, and Shiluach HaKein only applies to things that you can eat, right, not to non-kosher eggs. So those are the three possible reasons. Tosfos rejects two of them, keeps the most straightforward one, but we're going to see different Rishonim and Achronim actually go with the other approaches, and we'll see how they read it into the Gemara. Whether we see that today or tomorrow, or we'll start, whether we start seeing that now or do it tomorrow, depends on whether there's questions now or not. But yeah, Nettie.
Something you were
mocked-ish,
like something that's hektish, like it's not like something that you just like happened upon, and it's just like borderless sitting there. like you were
yeah, but I think the way we darshan, right, we say kikare problem is zuman, we usually take that to be if it's not under your authority, not in your rishus, but once you made it hektish, you actually solve that problem while creating a different problem.
But can't you not be mocked-ish if it's, so you're saying you're,
maybe it was mizuman before, but now it's not anymore. Okay. But we'll see the Gemara on Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph is trying to figure out the scenario. Hechi dami, what's the scenario where you were makdish it? And it's very hard to have a scenario where you were makdish it where you weren't previously the owner. So your question is very on point. There's a way around it, but that's, I guess, when you do that next Gemara, you'll see the way the Gemara gets around it. But at this point in time, it's no longer mizuman because it belongs to Hekdesh. How you can get it to Hekdesh without, okay, without hitting that stage is a tricky question that the Gemara deals with. Okay, any other questions? Yeah?
So just to clarify, the first two reasons are learned from the beginning of the pasuk, and the third reason is learned
Yes. I mean, the takala you could say is from the beginning of the pasuk. You could say it's just sort of an independent reason, but the way Rashi's treating it,
focusing on, like, the mother bird as opposed to the
eggs. Yes, exactly. Right, focusing on the mother versus the eggs. The first two are focusing on the mother. The third focuses on the eggs, and we'll see when we get to the Rambam. This will be an important distinction. So thank you for raising that. Other questions or comments or thoughts? Okay. We have like 4 minutes, which is just enough time to start something that then everyone will forget. So let's do that. So let's jump to source number one here, which is the Ramban. The Ramban asking, this is going to complicate things a bit, but the Ramban asking, what's the Havamina here? Muktash in my Tama lo. Right? Why is Kachim excluded? So he says, Tema, what are we trying to do here? What's the Havamina? V'hecha kasoka daitin l'meymar d'mishaleach ha'em d'hashel hekdeshi. What's the Havamina? Right? We have a drasha, we have a pasuk that teaches us you can't send the mother bird away. What do you need the pasuk for? It should be obvious if the mother bird is hektish, you can't send it away. It's hektish. It doesn't belong to you. You have to be giving it to the gizbar. How could you send it away? Right? Almost like the answer is so good. Why do we need to ask the question? The ikla meymar, so he gives two possible answers. The ikla meymar, mishum delo yikach adam aim al habanim vafilu lidvar mitzvah. So maybe... right, the Havamina here, what we would have thought is because of the mitzvah here of Shiloh HaKein, you wouldn't even give it to Hekdesh, that this mitzvah would override that mitzvah. The mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein would override the mitzvah of giving it to Hekdesh. That was the Havamina. Kamash Malan, the Pasuk teaches us that you do in fact give it to Hekdesh in the sense that you don't send it away. So that's answer number one. And
you think that you make it hektesh?
Well, it already is hektesh, right? So at some point, whoever has it is supposed to give it to the gizbar. But the point is you don't send it away, which would be undoing the hektesh in effect. So that's answer number one, that really, you know, the Havamina was, yeah, that Shiloh HaKein would override the mitzvah of giving it to hektesh. Kamash Malan, no, the mitzvah of hektesh wins out. Inami, answer number two, Shelo yikach habanim kevan she'eno yachol l'shaleach ha'em. Right, the other option is, well, you're sort of in a pickle, right? If you do try to take the eggs or the chicks, then you're stuck between the mitzvah of Hekdesh and the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein. So the Havamina would have been, you can't take those chicks or eggs, right? As soon as you go and take that, you're creating this clash. You're creating this problem of, well, it's Hekdesh, but on the other hand, I'm supposed to send it away. I can't do both, so don't get into that situation. That's what you would have thought. Don't get into that situation. Kamash Malan, the drasha, the pasuk teaches us that there's no mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein here, and you in fact can take the eggs, right? And you don't need to send the mother bird away, although probably at some point you should send it to Hekdesh. Fine, Kamash Malan, Kra, that's what the Pasuk teaches us, Shalech Tishalach, Prat Lezeh, Sha'atam Etzuvah La'avi Olidei Gizbar. And you're supposed to send it to the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash. We'll stop reading here. The next piece is just sort of a repeat of a line in Tosfos. But it's interesting, there's two different approaches here to how to look at the relationship between the mitzvah of Shiluach and the mitzvah of Hekdesh. Right? The first view is that there's really a clash, and you have to choose between one and the other, and the Havamina is one would win, the Maskana is the other would win. Right? The Havamina is you would send it away anyways, the Maskana is you send it to Hekdesh. The second answer really doesn't go in that direction, wants to avoid all conflict, right, when you have that problem. We'll see that will come into play a bit more, especially when we see the run. So get that source sort of on our minds and out of the way and clearing the way for, I think, what we'll start with tomorrow, which is going into a bit more depth on these alternate options, these two alternate options that Tosfos raises and rejects as to what the line in the Gemara really means or what the real reason is. So we'll get to that tomorrow. And for now, you know, it'll be a bit of a cliffhanger as to how the other approaches work. Oh, it's a hand. Yes, Sarah. Can't unplug it? No, she's not muted, but we can't hear you, Sarah. Sorry, we're going to try to set this up somehow. Is the volume on?
My volume is
what
off.
Audio is plugged? Is the Zoom using?
I think you turned it back off.
Whoops.
Try it again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yay.
Could you just repeat the two Havaminas from
the two alternate reasons that are rejected by Tosfos?
Yes.
Yeah, so the first one is this idea of takala, that if you send the bird away, it'll cause problems for people because it's asurbana. And the second answer is that you learn out not from the mother bird, but from the chicks, that since you can't eat them because they belong to Hekdesh, therefore the whole mitzvah shouldn't apply. So those are the two alternate paths, and we'll see, even though Tosfos rejects them, some other Rishonim and Achronim actually like those reasons and see them in our Gemara.
In the Gemara also, is tikkach lach used to prove that the eggs must be kosher, or also that the mother must be kosher?
That's used for the eggs, right? Tikkach lach, that you would take the eggs. The drasha for the mother is from Tzipor. Tzipor is presumed to be a kosher animal, whereas Oaf is can include non-kosher.
But Tzipor is less easily, I would think, less easily generalizable to anything that you can't benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a Hekdesh bird on non-Hekdesh eggs, then it would be harder to, like, that argument would be harder to make, would it not?
Which argument? The tikkach lach argument?
Yeah.
Yep, 100%. We'll get there. Some people raise that in reading the Rambam. So yeah, good. Okay. Jordana.
You mentioned for the Ramban that the two answers that he gives show a different way that he's like viewing the clash between the halacha. Can you just go over that again?
Yeah, well, it's sort of, you know, the first one is clearly about thinking about it as a clash, right? The Havamina is that the mitzvah of Shiluach went out. The Maskana is no, the mitzvah of Hekdesh wins out. The second approach seems to avoid the clash idea entirely, right? And to say, you should try not to enter that situation in the Havamina. The Maskana is you can because it's not actually a problem. But I think that's less clear as to, you know, it's not clear how he actually reads our Gemara, which says that it's not a problem. It would seem like that you somehow avoid the clash in our sugya. But we'll see. When we see the Ran, that may reflect a bit better on the Ramban. So hold those thoughts. Yeah.
Both of these are Havamina. So you're saying the Ramban rejects both of these? Or who's
referring to this as a Havamina? Well, this is on the line in the Gemara, right? The Ramban's whole question is, what's the Havamina of the Gemara? So this is all in the Havamina, but it would seem like the Maskana is like, there's a Pasuk, and therefore you don't send away the mother bird. But it sounds like the logic mostly stands, other than that you flip the clash direction, or that you no longer need to avoid... you know, or need to avoid entering the situation. Right? But yeah, we can keep those options open. Okay, any final questions? Okay. Oh, is that, Sarah, is your hand still up, or is that that's an old hand? Okay. Good. So I think we're done. So we'll pick up tomorrow with the continuation of this sugya.